You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast with my host, Neil Schaefer. And today we have a very special guest who Neil is going to introduce as she is a good longtime friend of his.
Thank you, Amanda. Yes, it's really exciting to see someone from a long time ago that I really haven't seen. I know, Amanda, for you as well, you've been using this podcast to get in touch with contacts from afar.
Yeah.
So today's guest, Mira Rodriguez, we met. She applied to actually speak at the Social Tools Summit, which is this conference that I co-founded, man, 5-6 years ago. And working at Microsoft, and I know we're going to hear a lot more about that, but a community manager and just really a lot of great advice to share to the community, really refreshing take on community and really on marketing. And that's expanded over those years to actually publish a book that maybe some of you have heard of, you better have heard of, and obviously by the end of this podcast, you'll be buying it, but brand storytelling, putting customers at the heart of your brand story. And this is something coming from someone who started out as a community manager. And I also believe you have like a journalistic PR background as well. So we're going to hear all about this. So today is all about how you build influence within this large enterprise that is Microsoft. And then obviously coming out with the book and building influence in a greater scale. So Mary, welcome to the School of Influence podcast.
Oh, Neil, it's such a great pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. We were just talking kind of in the background about how long it's been. Both of us were like, oh my gosh, it's been a long time. So good to see you. Good to hear from you, Amanda. Nice to meet you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and you look younger compared to the last. I just want to say.
You're just saying that. Stop. We were just talking about how old my kids are. That's why he's saying that.
Okay, yeah, that's a whole other subject. We won't go there. But anyway. So Mary, for those that don't know you, let's get started with your journey. And was there a journey before Microsoft in sort of PR journalism that we should know about as well?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, I went to school initially for communications, and I got into it was a thing back then because I didn't know where I wanted to go. And social media had not even been born. Can you believe that, when I was actually in school? So, you know, there was no digital track, if you will. So it was general executive communications type, of a track. And I went into Microsoft and eventually joined as the social media manager for the service channels. So if you were tweeting us or Facebook or any of those channels that were kind of developing at the time, my team was the one responding. And we found and I know I talked about this at the Social Summit, it was this disparate between the brand doing things on the brand side and the marketing side, and then us on the service side, not really being on brand because we were still talking about, dear sir, how can we help you on Twitter? You know, so it was this idea, and I do have a marketing background as well. I ended up getting my integrated marketing degree from Georgetown, my master's degree. So with all that came this idea of really unifying a voice at Microsoft and driving that influence from a brand perspective.
So how did you get, I guess, where did it all start with Microsoft? I think at the time, yes, Everyone's like, man, I want to be social media manager at Microsoft. How'd you do that?
Yeah. You know, I didn't have, at that time, of course, I didn't have a social media experience. Nobody did. We were all figuring it out. And so I applied, you know, the job opened, and I was actually in leading Latin America for operations. And I saw the job, I applied, and I was like, I'm never getting this. You know, I don't have experience. But when they asked me to come and interview, I was honest. I was like, look, I don't think anyone has any experience in social media. We're all figuring it out. What I do know is the 360 of a business. And so I think from a social media standpoint, if we understand that experience that we're giving our customers on that end, we can drive that on the social channels, and we're learning all together. So yeah, I got the job, and then soon after we launched Windows 10. And so I was at the biggest launch, and we broke the internet. You know, it wasn't Kim Kardashian, it was us with Windows 10. And it was incredible, because at the time Microsoft was operating under this idea that the support channels were going to be as they were before, phone and forums. And so they were not. Everyone went to social media, and my team was scrambling. It was incredibly, I think it was just a miracle that we made it through, and all green, I have to say, but it was a learning experience. I thought we were going to die.
So how did, you know, working within a large company, how did your, I guess, people around you, your bosses and everyone, when I talk to a lot of social media managers of big enterprises, yeah, they often have a hard time getting buy-in from executives.
Oh God, yes.
Getting them to see their value. And this is where, you know, I talk about building influence within the enterprise. How did you go about, it's almost like an internal sale.
It is.
But how did you go about, you know, doing that? And what can others listening learn from that process?
Yeah, you know, that's the internal sale that you're talking about. It really, you do become a salesman, a saleswoman, and you have to pitch it from each angle on impact to each of the business functions, right? So at Microsoft, for example, obviously we have sales, we have marketing, we have HR, we have branding. So there's many verticals. And when I come in and step in and say, hey, I would like to present this project. For me, the project was called Unifying the Social Media Voice. I had to sell it to each of those business functions from how it would impact them specifically from a business perspective. For sales, they want the bottom line. For marketing, they want to make sure that we're aligned to branding and how we're aligning to branding, not taking anybody's job, right? So it was basically empathy. It was understanding how it looked to them, how it would land with them from a project perspective. And then it was also niche. I believe as a community manager, our responsibility is to have a niche role and sell that role, because we are the experts in that field. We are at the front line and we see the back end as well. So I began to talk about story, which later on ended up making me a storyteller at Microsoft, which didn't exist as a role. But it was about the story. I kept talking about unifying that voice and unifying the story of Microsoft. It came at a time when we were also rebranding. Satya, our CEO, had come in, had changed our mission. So it was leveraging times. You know, all of us in community management know that the times change rapidly and we have to kind of be ahead of the curve a little bit, even though we don't know what that curve looks like.
I have a question for you, especially during that time, like this idea of putting a brand like Microsoft on social media is kind of like a nouveau, even to this day, it's almost like an accounting firm. Like, do we have to be on social media? And if so, what is the purpose? What was your like thesis, or what was your pitch that of like, why do we have to be on social media and what is our purpose?
Yeah. And I think so. That was what was saving grace for me, if I could call it that, was when we launched Windows 10 and, you know, we had operated as always with the other channels. When people took to social media, not the other channels, it was my pitch to say, hey guys, this is where the world is going. Like, it's black and white. Here's the data. Here's what we're showing. People are taking to social media channels to talk to the brand. It's no longer a phone transaction, even for support. It's no longer a one-on-one. It's exposed to what our customers are demanding things, and they're exposing their demands in front of the world to see. And the world is watching how we're responding. So it was taking that opportunity to say, you know, where people are going. I think research is very important from a community manager perspective. We have to consistently research the trends that are happening. I do this all the time. I've learned that that's actually the best way to be ahead of trends. I do a research that I learned, a method, actually it's in my book. It's called the unobvious trends research. And it's you taking ideas that you're seeing and that are kind of bubbling in the background, and you're creating big themes around it and going, this may actually be a thing a couple of years from now. I wrote the book 3 years, 2.5 years before COVID-19 hit. And the research trends that I did on obvious research trends came true during COVID-19. Nobody would have expected that. I mean, nobody could have said this is what's going to happen. Social stands that would be, brands had to really craft their voice and create a social stance for political and for, you know, corporate responsibility purposes. So people were no longer buying a product. They were buying and funding something beyond the brand. That was one of the things that came up. When COVID-19 hit, we saw brands immediately take into this approach of corporate responsibility and social responsibility matched with all of the unrest political unrest that was going on here in the Americas, in North America, and also just globally, the social injustices. So no longer, I was talking in the book about, no longer it's a nice to have or a consideration for a brand to talk about these things. They have to take a stance. They have to take a political stance because now they're being an entity to the customers.
So how do you think, and I want to, we're sort of fast forward. I want to get to the book in a second here. Dissecting your time at Microsoft. So I know you've been successful with your efforts internally there. So how has bringing together this unified voice and this story voice, this storytelling from Microsoft social media accounts, how do you think that's led to a redefining of the relationship between Microsoft and the outside world and ultimately giving Microsoft a little bit more influence in the eyes of people?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. What I began to do was I decided it wasn't going to be an inside out approach. It was going to be an outside in. I knew that if I built my brand on the Microsoft platform, people would begin to listen. So that's what I started to do. I was Miri from Microsoft. I began to go out in the channels and talk about my own experiences, but also show the mom me, the dog mom me, the, you know, peeling all the layers of that vulnerability and story that I kept talking about. I was actually testing it on myself, if you will, to see how it would work. And what happened over, I would say, the course of maybe 3 years tops was Microsoft began to recognize that I was getting that influence outside in the name of Microsoft. I was making the brand look good as well, obviously. And so they began to bring me in and say, hey, Miri, we'd like to feature you here. Hey, Miri, let's have you come here and talk about what you're doing. And so now I also became an influence inside because I had developed my persona outside. So and this was a twofold approach. One, I am my own entity, but two, I represent a big brand, a corporate brand. And so both come together. They're not mutually exclusive, but they can both influence on both accounts. And so today I actually sit at the Storytelling Council. It's a team of six people worldwide that I actually am the community manager for Storytelling Community. And using that kind of idea of building your own brand on the platform and then, you know, bringing those insights back to Microsoft and leveraging that internally.
I was actually very curious about that. I was like, how do you build your own brand within your own influence as your own entity? And I think that's a lot of viewers and almost anybody that wants to be above average in their career, right? How do you build yourself as beyond just, I work for Microsoft, I'm tied to the brand. And you're saying one sort of supported the other. Does Microsoft sort of really help to, you know, put you on a platform like as you, or were they kind of like you as for us?
Not immediately. They didn't immediately because we weren't open source as a company. We were very closed. You would not hear of executives going out there talking vulnerably about themselves. This is a newer approach. And it was kind of that wave that I was riding. It was a risk. I took a risk. I didn't know if it was going to be immediately like stop, like, hey, Miri, what are you doing? And I've had those conversations. I'm not going to lie. But I knew that the platform, I was making Microsoft look good because it is part of my platform, who I am. I work for Microsoft. My learnings and my insights I bring from work that I've done there. My book is a lot of stories that I, you know, that I've had and the experience that I've had at Microsoft. And so that's mine. Those are my lived experiences, but Microsoft is very much a part of it. So I went off on my own, if you will, taking into consideration, obviously, the brand and how I portrayed the brand outside. At one point, they called me and they said, hey, Miri, we want to feature this. We want to feature you. How are you doing this? Can you teach other people? So I became a personal brand consultant, which is what I do today as well. I ended up opening my own LLC to consult with other brands on personal branding. And you ask about the how, it's that idea that we are not defined by the roles that we do. That is who, you know, that just enhances who we are. It's a part of who we are. It's not exactly who we are. I'm a mom, I'm a sister, I'm a wife, you know, I'm so many things. I'm a friend, I'm a person that works at Microsoft. All of these things make up who I am, but none of them, it defines who I am, right? All of them do at the same. It's a collective approach. So when you see it that way, you go on, you think about your own personal mission, your own personal values, and then you develop that. And that's what I talk about in personal branding.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it speaks to, you know, can brands become influencers when they're not humans?
Yes.
And right. the Miri at Microsoft just brings both of those things together in a really eloquent way. And it makes me wonder why, you know, I'm sure a lot of companies actually don't want you doing that, right? You know what I mean?
I'm going to say nothing about this right now. I plead the fifth.
We obviously have a lot of business leaders that listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, what your message and your story and the successes are, don't be afraid of your employees becoming more influential, especially if they're tying your brand name to their personal brand. That is an absolute win-win. Why don't more businesses encourage this, I guess is my question.
It's a great question. I would say not even encourage it, empower them. Give them the resources. You know, when you think about brand storytelling, I actually talk about this in the book. It's the brand has an opportunity here to make an army of storytellers that are going to go tell the brand story from your individual perspective, right? A story lands, and once it lands, everybody just grabs it and makes it their own. That's the success of a story, if it's good. And so I'm consuming empowerment. So Microsoft, you know, our mission is to empower every person and organization on the planet to achieve more. I wake up every day and I'm like, how am I going to go empower every person and organization on the planet? Every person is my own audience, obviously. And within that space, I'm delivering that mission, but I'm also living that mission individually. Empowerment looks different to me than it probably does to someone else. I come from the slums of Venezuela. I'm an immigrant. I'm a Latina in tech. I'm a woman. So there's intersectionality to that story. Empowerment means something different to me. So when I talk about that empowerment, then other people see that, not only see the representation, but they see how the story is landing in my space. And it means something different to someone else. And it should, right? We're all leveraging that mission differently. And so it actually enables the brand even better. It influences better because now people not only see what the brand is saying at the brand level because they have to, there's Miri from Microsoft talking about Microsoft, and it's an authentic thing. I'm not getting paid to do this. I do it because I love it, and I'm really, really living that mission.
Yeah, and there's actually a lot of research that shows that people trust employees almost more than they hands down more than they trust a founder or a CEO. Obviously, more than an advertisement or whatever. So, and you have a good point about empowering employees. I think employees need the infrastructure to be able to do that, to facilitate that. So what is some, and that's something that you specialize in. What are some of those, like, what are some takeaways that you could give that are like, what does that mean to empower? What does that mean to like build the infrastructure to that?
Absolutely. So the first thing I would recommend is creating a group of, I would call them insiders or people that immediately you recognize as influencers. They're already doing the job. They do it because they love it. And so bring them in, huddle them together, give them resources. You know, build a story, the brand story, and say, hey, this is your story. What do you need? If you need social assets, social media assets, digital assets, here they are. Let's build, you know, brand guidelines and all the things that you need in terms of resources. Training is also important. There's many trainings out there. You don't even have to create your own. Like, navigate a space where you can find a training where your employees can learn to build their brand or to show up on video, whatever those trainings are. And that's empowerment. You're giving them what they need. Everyone is on a different journey as well. So it's not one size fits all, but recognizing that you are the person giving them the resources and they come to you. At Microsoft, we have a community called Storytellers. We enable each other. We have a thing called Sunday Storytellers. So every Sunday, one person from the community, this is a worldwide community. So, you know, thousands of people, they get an opportunity to tell a story on a Sunday. They get picked randomly and, you know, the team selects them and say, hey, you're going to, you know, we have a calendar, obviously. And so they can talk about anything. And that also enables us to say, some people be like, oh, I'm not really good. No, you are. This is your opportunity to showcase that. And the creativity flows. Some people will say story from a video or from a photo, to them that storytelling. So really enabling the creativity and also at the same time discovering what that is. It acts as a feedback loop where you enable a white space, people come in and deliver on their own spaces. And then you also find needs. Right now we know that engineers want to tell their own stories from the side. That was something never seen before, never seen before. And engineers want to learn. They're coming to me, they say, Miri, deliver a workshop. Finance, I've delivered like 4 workshops in the last 2 months on folk alone because they want to learn storytelling. So that's a thing. It's not a trend. It's a movement, I would say, where people want to be empowered to tell the story from their own perspective and influence people from their own perspective. And there's that space. We all have a different space where we're influencing. So why not?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating and refreshing take. So I think, Miri, when we first met, this is 2014-15, employee advocacy was, there was just a big boom. Companies were starting to do it, but most of them failed.
Yeah.
And I think the only ones that succeeded did it because they actually invested in training, right? They actually invested in helping employees develop a personal brand.
That's right.
I now talk about this. I know, Amanda, you probably talk about it as well, but I talk about these not employee, obviously, but employee influencer programs. Treat employees as if they were influencers. Invest in people, not Facebook ads, right?
Yes.
And, but you're taking it to a whole new level with the storytelling and really empowering them, which I love. So this now, I think, is a really good way to venture into your book. So what got you thinking about writing a book? I mean, Amanda, I can ask you the same thing, but I don't think we ever had the discussion. But where did the book come out? I mean, you're a Microsoft employee. Not everybody writes books.
No.
So how did that all come about?
Well, you know, I actually did not. It was not my idea. I was in London. Fast forward, I'm now a storyteller. So I got asked to come to Seattle, which I had, when I got hired at Microsoft, by the way, I did say to the recruiter, I will never go to Seattle. So never say never. I was like on my way to Seattle. And the job, they were hiring three storytellers for six business function areas while we were driving our digital transformation. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. And so the stories we were, you know, this is a journalistic approach to storytelling, was our job. Mine was data, AI, and security functions. And I was to go and uncover these really personal stories from engineers and go tell them. And it's a kind of like a soft marketing approach where we tell the story. We kind of talk about how we're digital and transforming with our own products and services so that people can go do the same. But have you ever tried to, you know, get an engineer to tell you a story?
It's not easy.
Oh, man. They don't want to tell stories. They don't need to tell stories. The data speaks for itself, right? So it was just, it was tough. I spent my first 3 months literally going home every day and going to my husband, I think I'm going to get fired. We need to be like ready to go back to Florida real quick. Like, let's have a plan. I was sincerely scared. I was absolutely not giving any impact to the organization for 3 months. And so out of that came the idea of using design thinking to tell stories. And with that approach, I mean, it was just an overnight success. And before I know it, I'm traveling the world teaching this approach on storytelling with design thinking principles. So I'm in London teaching this approach. And the publisher came, a publishing commissioner, and she's like, listen, you need to put this in the book. And I was like, no, I really don't. I was like, not really. I'm like, I got 1,000 things happening. But, you know, I loved, and this is part of my personal branding pitch, she believed in me. I was like, I can't do this. I'm not a writer. She goes, no, you are. You need to do this. And what sold me on this idea was, she said, you know, you're doing this workshop by workshop in 1 to many, maybe 1 to 500, maybe 1,000 at the most. You know, a book is 1 to many, just global. And so these ideas people need to know on a global level. And so I was like, okay, let's go do that. I was absolutely not, it was the worst timing of my life. Everything was happening, good and bad. And so I sprinted through it, and it was a miracle that this book came out. And it was supposed to come out summer 2019. I pushed the deadline because everything was happening. And it ended up coming out March 2020, which is like, I was like, what happens in March 2020?
Yeah. And that's, by the way, that's when my last book, The Age of Influence, came out as well. So, and publishers, yeah, they're pretty famous for delaying book publishing. So Amanda can talk about that as well. You mentioned design thinking changed everything. Tell us about design thinking. What is it?
So design thinking is an approach, a model, a 5-step model that starts with empathy. It's empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test. Is this kind of, I call it, you know, non-ego idea, that anything that we do or produce as a product or service, even stories or even content, first goes through iteration and iteration based on our empathy toward our audience. And that was, to me, shocking, because I'm not an empath. And I didn't even know that you could become one. I thought it was just a personality trait. I had taken a personality test. I always take these personality tests. And, you know, there was one called StrengthsFinder. And it's like 35 personality attributes. Empathy is like number 33 on me. Like, no empathy at all. No empathy at all. So I was like, how am I going to do this? You know, what does this even mean? So I began to research on empathy, and I learned there's 3 levels of empathy. I learned you can become an empath. It is a skill set. This was happening, you know, 4 years before people were talking about leading with empathy. It was not a thing or a buzzword. Like, nobody wanted to lead with empathy. You know, that was not the thing. But I started to learn, and I started to actually use my personal brand to test these concepts on the different channels, on LinkedIn, on Twitter. And it was succeeding. I was really shocked about the influence that you gain by becoming empathetic to your audience and yourself. So there's a component in you being empathetic to yourself as well. And so I began to implement that in everything, in every production that I do. And that's how I began to produce stories based on design thinking principles. It's also this idea of prototyping only. It's never one size fits all. We're always iterating. And what an incredible approach when we know, you know, through the pandemic that it's ever changing. Everything is ever changing. So, you know, people are thinking, hey, I have this one model. This is going to work forever. We know it doesn't. As community managers, we're always iterating, but this approach forces us to kind of pause. I always say that storytelling is not, it's not the mere telling of stories. It's design. It's the crafting and being very intentional with empathy and vulnerability to think about how this will land with audiences, especially in today's climate.
So interesting. So does the book sounds like it's got a framework that walks people through becoming empathetic. How do you become empathetic? How do you then put the nuts and bolts? And that's so interesting because you designed like thinking about engineers, but I think in terms of overall marketing, that's one of the biggest challenges marketers face is not just getting the buy-in. You can't get the buy-in from leadership because we don't know how to communicate measurement results, yes. Trying to quantify them with that. And that's ironically enough, I'm giving a talk on this tonight, is how do you measure marketing? And part of it, I was reading something about you earlier, something that you had said in a podcast or an interview about, you know, telling story, like why try to force numbers around it? A story tells a lot more. Can you speak a little bit to that in terms of like, how do you communicate that to the marketers or to advertise or to everybody that's going, oh, well, we got all this buzz and we got all this, like this bad word of engagement. And
yeah. Well, first of all, I'm so curious about your. I'm gonna Google that real quick after this.
And also, I know what I'm ordering right away.
Awesome. Yeah. So you know, so there's this idea. I think that storytelling or even empathy are like trends, and they're not. They're complementary to what the work that you already are doing is. And so, you know, marketing campaigns have a space. They always have a space. They are short run, you know, ideas that you take in, you evaluate the market, you go, okay, we have an opportunity here. Let's go do this campaign. And it works. And there's paid behind it. I have learned in my experience, benchmarking stories or benchmarking empathy has two success factors. One is organic reach and organic engagement. Why? Because people will organically tune into the stories that appeal to them at the core human level. That's just what we do as humans. We will tune in. We will share it with people we love. That's what we do. And so I found, I was doing this, remember, in tech, I was doing the core services engineering organization, not on the marketing side. We didn't have the marketing dollars at all. And so we had no paid media. And when I began to test this theory, just to give you an idea, we have green content that lives in a place called Microsoft IT Showcase. It's an open forum. You can look it up. And it was just, you know, where we put in our IT stories, only IT people and devs know about it. So it's kind of like a word of mouth website. We were having around 125,000 views year over year, which is fine. And, you know, it's for the dev community only. When we began to implement this idea of design thinking and empathy, we went to over 5 million year over year, no paid. No paid media. This means people were just sharing the stories that mattered. And so you will see that organic engagement. Of course, paid media always helps. And, you know, it obviously forces a little bit more visibility. But honestly, you will see that authentic engagement, and it is for the long haul. So what I want to make sure that we don't look at stories or branding or influence as a trend. It is part of a bigger strategy to stay connected with the customer in today's world. We are hungry for connection today more than ever. So really delivering that at the authentic space, Miri from Microsoft shows up, and then, you know, Paul from Microsoft shows up, and everybody starts, we see the brand authentically showing up with all that we are and peeling those layers, and we get curious and we stay connected, and it builds equity with the brand.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Amir. I recently worked with a client and I had a chance to do an analysis of Deloitte and just these big IT and what they're doing in social media. So at the end of the day, according to my analysis of like top performing posts, whenever humans were involved, i.e. employees, it is, and video. I mean, those are the two things, right? They outperform just anything else and just across the board. And so it's a question of, do you want to get, you know, 1% engagement if you have 500,000 followers, like on a LinkedIn company page, or 5 million followers versus that 0.1 or just being irrelevant, right? So I love that, you know, stay connected. I would say to remain relevant, Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different ways to look at it. But, you know, at the end of the day, Amanda, man, I'd say there's always going to be marketing driven social media and PR driven social media, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the company, the strategy, what have you. And yeah, that's just the way it is. But I do believe that you now see more and more mirror. I don't know how it is at Microsoft. You now see more and more teams that are split between organic and paid. So you got your performance marketing group, and then you got your community. So everybody can have their own, you know, part of the world.
Yeah, and they're complementary, right? They're not conflicting. They shouldn't be. They are complementary. And that's why I say it's a long haul approach, because you're building equity little by little. And I think we saw that even more happen through the pandemic, when brands kind of had to take us. I mean, I consulted. So the book launched right in the middle of the pandemic, right? At the outset. And I had a 17 city, international city book tour planned. I was in San Diego, actually, and I was on my way to, I forget what country in Europe, and I came home. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do next? What happened next is that people began to read more because they were stuck at home and they were reading my book. And so brands started to consult with me. These were brands from every sector, private and public, large and small. I mean, Fortune 100 and then mom and pop shops. And they were asking the same question, Miri, what do I do? How do I stay connected with my customers? And my answer back to them was, well, you should know. I don't know. They're your customers. Begin to listen to how they're feeling, what they're doing, what they're talking to you. Listen. Listen to what they're saying. Are you scared? They probably are too. How do you manage that? It's time to build equity with empathy. And so it resonated even more. I think brands now, you talk about staying relevant. Relevancy, it's beyond bottom line. Relevancy is building relationship that keeps the customer loyal for the long haul. And we build that little by little, right? I mean, it's just, and so there's no shortcuts there.
I love that. I think what you're saying is so important on so many levels in business and in marketing, not just humanizing the brand and not just not even just the social paid versus organic, but there's a whole side to a business. Like if you've done such a great job in working within the internal employees, right? And championing that, but how do you quantify that? And it's really hard to quantify the tangibles of a relationship where an employee loves to work for you and they are going to talk about you in conversation. They're going to, and you can't put a number around that, but you can put a story around that. And people need to learn how to do that to communicate the value of investing in these kind of programs.
Yeah. You know, we have an employee advocacy at Microsoft. Of course we do. And I'm part of it. I earned the award last year, 2020 of all things, as top 10 influencer of the entire company. So what's really crazy, and I was so surprised, what's really crazy about this thing is that I do use our advocacy content tool to curate content, but I don't do the suggested, right? Like they suggest like 3 posts per week and, you know, they tell you the hashtags, whatever. I do my thing. I've built my brand and I do my thing. And the engagement is up the roof. So people just engage because it doesn't feel forced, because it's not forced. I share what I want when I want, because it's an intentional sharing with my audience. I don't, and I think that's bringing it all together. When you build your own brand on the side, you're careful. You nurture that audience. You don't want to be salesy to the audience, right? So it's, you know, you want to share content that to you and to them is relevant and that they continue to engage with. So I don't share just to share. And so when I do, people do connect, and it's been, you know, obviously it works.
Yeah. And there's, you know, Amanda and I, we both wrote books on influencer marketing. So that this analogy with brands trying to control the messages that influencers say, when you want to, I mean, they're way better at it than you are.
Right.
Why would you want to control them? Right. And it's the exact same thing with employees. Yeah. So it's a really great analogy.
What you're saying too, what I'm getting a lot of in terms of it, is that there's not necessarily, there's no best practice. You can't dictate what somebody should do, mm-hmm. but there are tools and frameworks rather to help organize, which just sounds like what your book does and what you do. And I think that's a big difference, is that there's no, it's not like, here's the template.
Right.
3 posts, this is what to post, or this is just, it's a way to, rather a framework, which is so cool. And yeah, Neil and I talk a lot about that kind of stuff. So this has been so helpful. I can't wait to read your book. It's actually better. Neil does the same thing when we each host a guest, come to the other person, the other person tries not to do that much, to be the mm-hmm. objective person that has no idea. And then afterwards I go and do the crash learn.
Cool. Cool. You know, one thing I've been seeing as well in terms of influence, because this is the topic, is also when we think about that organic approach to influence of what you're saying here and that delivery, you know, there's also fatigue right now from an influencing perspective of like what social media influencers are doing today and how have they done it and how real it is or not. We're seeing a lot of that. And so when we don't ring fence that or control it, it comes across not only authentic and genuine, but it comes across intentional, right? So it's not like, oh, I'm just getting paid to do this or I'm getting told to do this. It's I know and I feel it. So I'm sharing it from my heart and people receive it from the heart. So it shows up differently. And I've seen that. I've seen that so much. And again, when that fatigue of influence fatigue, I call it, and, you know, we're talking more and more about the fake social media side and all the things that are happening there. And people can smell fake, you know, they can smell fake a mile away. So I think this is a new era when it comes to being an influencer, what that means. And I think it's more about being you, right? It's not just showing up a certain way or crafted a way that people want. We have deformalized, and COVID-19 has helped us transform that too. Who we are in front of the camera and who we are off camera. And these are blending more and more. So that authenticity, people are craving that as well.
That's great. What are some of the things that you've really been able to build thought leadership or influence, like real influence in the category? And I think that that's something that most people want, even if they're working for a big company. It's like, well, yeah. How did you do that? What would be some things that you would recommend to somebody that's, you know, let's say in a very senior position in their firm, but like, how do I also be my own brand?
Yeah. So I have, you know, my content formula, if you will, that I've kind of refined over the years. It's three things. So the first thing is that your content should be insightful. Insightful meaning I can't find it on Google, right? It's your lived experiences, it's your own insights. It's not, I just read this article, you can read it too, and here's the link. It's like, hey, I read this article, here's what I loved or hated about it. And then you bring your own insight. That is thought leadership. That's you saying what you think about the article. That's leadership and thought leadership. And so insightful content is very important. Inspirational, we all want to be inspired. And so I've done the test and I've gotten mad on social media. I've gone on Twitter jail for getting mad on social media. Like I've done it all and I've tested, you know, and people in the end, the content that always lives longer is positive thoughts. We want to be showered with positive thoughts. We want, you know, a puppy picture once in a while. And that works. It works. And so, you know, if you have a puppy, use your puppy. That works. I mean, whatever. So think about how you can inspire your audience. People want to be inspired. And the last one is personal. So, you know, you have to also create layers of your vulnerability, how much you're willing to share. You're talking about an executive level person. I understand at that level, there are some parameters you have to play with, but you're still a person. So if you put yourself in a situation, take a selfie eating a good burger and say, wow, this was yummy. You know, that just shows up. You know, the CEO is eating a burger. And it just creates that connection at the human level of we forgot that you're a human, but now we remember because you're eating a burger and you like burgers. And so it's that simple. You don't have to go off and tell your childhood stories or stories of abuse or, you know, you don't have to get that deep, but you can show, again, these nuggets once in a while that remind people how human you can be.
I like that. I just took notes to deliver to my students tomorrow in a lecture. That's something that I was like, those three things, those are really great examples. Thank you.
Yeah. And if you can plug all three in once, those are the viral content posts, man. I've done this time and time again. And I can tell you, I've gone viral a few times and each time it's a mixture of the three. So the content has been insightful. It has been inspirational and personal, all three. And it's like, whew, magic.
And what's really funny, Mir, is I find, and I go back to my past being in B2B sales, and whenever we did client visits with executives and like with the CEO, they have tons of stories.
Oh gosh, right,
of how they've helped clients and so it's like you know the content's there, right?
Oh, it's there, and they have great backstories. These are like awesome, you know, backstories of I was in here and I saw this customer and we started chatting and you're like, oh my gosh, I would love that the world would know this, you know? So
why isn't this in our blog, right?
Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Mira, you know, you've given us so much to think about today on so many different levels. Thank you so much. I mean, where, you know, what is it looking like? Obviously, you just came out with your book, but what is the next, you know, year or two look like for you? What are your plans?
Wow. What a question, Neil. So, you know, actually, the publisher came to me requesting that I write another book. You talk about B2B. So now on the B2B side, I'm doing a lot of work on that space. So the learnings and insights. I think the book has been successful because it was just my ongoing learnings. Like I don't have it figured out at all. I'm just figuring it out as I go and sharing with people. So this might be that place. I've also gotten some personal news, which I'm sharing here, but I don't know why, but that may stop a little bit of my things going in the near future. I may have to pause some things to take care of some personal things, but I hope to be back full force soon. I love what I do, Neil. I think all of us here and listening, we love what we do because it's about people. And it's not forced, right? And so when I receive news and I'm like, oh, wow, this is happening. Okay. That's the human side of me. Like, stuff happens. Like, we got stuff happening all the time. It's a human condition. So not always thinking we got it all put together, not always thinking we have to have it put together, learning that more and more. And you know, I believe we're made of body, spirit, and soul. So nurturing those three areas, really important, especially in these times. And then really being ourselves. Again, I don't know what this journey is going to look like. Maybe you'll see on social media. I'm considering sharing this on social media, but it's all about learning. You know, we tell stories so that we can learn from each other. And that's the beauty of storytelling. That's the beauty of influencing. We influence when we tell stories. So it all comes together. So go tell stories.
Awesome. Miria, I'm sure your book is available everywhere. What other places can people who want to learn more about you and connect with you, where should they go?
Yeah, they can go to my website, mirirod.com. So mirirod.com. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at mirirod and on LinkedIn. Reach me. I could probably say LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn, but it is so overwhelming with our student space that it takes me a little while to respond there. So I'll probably be better on Twitter and Instagram. Of course, on my website, you can send me a note there as well.
I'll be one of those following you right now.
Oh, yay. Same.
So thank you so much. This was really insightful.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.